أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. I am Abdul Hakim Qasim and I welcome you to another edition of Everyday Muslim Show on Women Radio 91.7 FM. Today is Saturday, 27th December 2025, corresponding to the 6th of Rajab, 1447 AH. It is the first Saturday of the 7th month of the Hijra year, 1447. We thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the gift of life and the gift of good health. We are less than 60 days to the month of Ramadan. We pray Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as we are alive, so then and beyond. Allahumma barik lana fi Rajab wa Sha'ban wa balighna Ramadan. On Everyday Muslim Show, we try to address misconceptions about Islam, foster peaceful coexistence within the society, and guide the everyday Muslim on their journey in Islam. This is made possible and is brought to you by the Muslim Public Affairs Center, MPAC, in partnership with Women Radio 91.7 FM. Today, inshallah, I want to take a look at a topic that is very, very important and is very dear to us and has to do with our teenagers. So today we're looking at, continuing with this series. The topic is growing up Muslim, faith and peer pressure. Growing up Muslim, faith and peer pressure. And we have a guest in the studio, with us, that will also be taking us through this. But for our listeners, this program is streaming live on YouTube via the Women Radio page. Search Women Radio on YouTube, click on the page and join to view the program. So later on the show, we would open our lines for you to call in and share your thoughts. And you can also send in your messages via SMS or WhatsApp. So when the time comes, we will do that. This program, again, is Everyday Muslim, and it is brought to you by MPAC in partnership with Women Radio 91.7. Just like to tell you that we are seeking your sponsorship and advert placement to sustain the program. We look up to you for your support and assistance. All right, so today marks the final episode of Everyday Muslim for 2025. As we close out the year, we wrap up our mental health series with a conversation on one of the most formative and delicate stages of life, the teenage years, the adolescent age. Growing up as a Muslim teenager today comes with unique and emotional and psychological challenges. So teenagers are navigating identity, self-worth, belonging, and purpose, all while facing intense peer pressure from friends, school environment, social media, and popular culture. For many Muslim teens, this pressure creates an internal conflict between faith and fitting in, between values and validation, and between who they are and who they feel they must become to be accepted. So these struggles are often silent. Teens may appear confident or normal on the outside, while internally they are battling anxiety, confusion, low self-esteem, or fear of being different. So without guidance, this tension can affect their mental health, spiritual connection, and decision-making. So Islam, however, offers a framework for identity, resilience, and moral clarity, one that empowers young Muslims, young people, to navigate pressure without losing themselves. So today we are honored to be joined by Dr. Taufika Salah Ibrahim, who brings professional insight and compassionate understanding to adolescent mental health. So together we will explore how Muslim teenagers can maintain emotional well-being, build confidence in their faith, and navigate peer pressure with wisdom, balance, and self-respect. For those of us that are meeting Dr. Taufika Salah Ibrahim for the first time, she is a university lecturer, certified associate adolescent coach, and founder of Empowered Mind Hub, a purpose-driven platform that supports adolescents in discovering their strength and living intentionally. With over a decade experience in academia, she has worked closely with students and families to address the root challenges affecting adolescent growth. Dr. Taufika blends her academic expertise with coaching strategies to provide practical, faith-aligned solutions. Her work continues to inspire growth, purpose, and excellence in the lives of young people and the families who raise them. So Dr. Taufika Salah Ibrahim, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. So it's a pleasure to have you on the show today, Doctor. To begin with, we know quite well that the teenage years are a critical stage of identity and emotional development. Yet, many Muslims feel pressured to belong at all costs. So from your experience, what are the most common emotional and mental struggles Muslim teenagers face today, and how does that constant need to fit their sense of self?
Jazakumullahu khairan for giving me this opportunity to share my insights on this wonderful topic, and a topic that it's something we need to be mindful of and do something intentionally to help our growing teenagers. So based on the question that you just put up to me now, I would like to start by saying that Muslim teenagers in the world today, they are being faced with questions, burning questions in their mind of who they are, where they belong to, or are they enough? Are they doing what is expected out of them? And this has shown us in science that in the teenage years, adolescents are trying to form their personal identity, they're trying to form their social identity, and also their religious identity. So, and these constant questions, they are trying to find answers, leads to emotional tension in their minds. So in my work and my experience with teenagers, the common emotional struggles that I've come across that they struggle with are, number one, fear of rejection. They want to be accepted by all, because they don't, that stage, they are still trying to understand who they are, where they fit in. So they try to perform at home to be accepted, perform at school. So fear of rejection is one of it. Confusion too about their identity is another struggle that they face. Anxiety, because of the constant performance in every spaces that they find themselves to, leads to the struggles. Then a common one again is low self-worth. They are still trying to get who they are. So they tend to have low self-worth. And the last one is the pressure to be accepted at home, in school, and wherever they find themselves, which is linked to the first one, fear of rejection. So those are the most common ones that we'd see around our teenagers today.
All right, thank you.
To the later part of the question, that how does that now lead to them trying to fit in? How does trying to fit in all these spaces affect their mental health? Because they are constantly trying to perform, it leads to emotional exhaustion, and it leads to a sense of self that is very fragile. They are not sure of who they are, so they are still trying to map out and link things together to be able to be themselves without trying to please others. So in short, it affects their sense of self, and their sense of self will become so fragile.
All right, thank you very much. Now, looking at what you have said now, that this really affects them, often we find out that many of these teenagers describe the feeling like they're like two different persons. A kind of one person, one version of them while they are home or in the worship houses, masjid or whatever, within with their family, and another kind of personality when they get to school or when they are with their colleagues, their friends, their peers. Now, how does this internal split between faith and acceptance, kind of like affect the mental health? In the sense that, probably some of them, does this kind of, this split, does it really probably lead to burnout or emotional confusion or even kind of like a break point one way or the other?
Okay. So I would like to to start by saying that this internal split that we see in teenagers, it's not intentional, and it's not a form of hypocrisy on their own part. It's a form of emotional survival. Wow. As I said earlier, they are trying to fit in into the different spaces that they find themselves at home, in school. Like, for example, when they are at home, they would want to do what their parents want them to do. When they are outside, they will want to fit in into what their peers expect of them. And so they are trying to adapt in different spaces, and that leads to emotional survival. Actually, they actually need help. They need the help of their parents and other adults in their life to be able to put all these things into perspective and not try to perform. So, and it actually leads to burnout. It leads to chronic anxiety, because they are always jittery, trying to please their mom, please dad, please friends, please the society. So as Muslims, parents and caregivers, we need to help them. We need to let them have a strong understanding of Islam, a strong understanding of who Allah says they are, not what society expects of them. It also leads to guilt and shame and emotional exhaustion, as I said. So one, we should understand that they're not doing that. They're not trying to do that on purpose. At that stage, their brain is still developing. They are still trying to form their identity. So it actually leads to mental health issues such as chronic anxiety, guilt, emotional exhaustion, confusion from their identity, and the fear of being found out, or maybe if they have some things that they are being engaged in. So that constant urge to fit in leads to burnout, as you said. It leads to all those things that you mentioned.
All right. Thank you very much for this. And for us understanding that this can actually lead to burnout, I think it would also make us understand them better. Yes. Now, in understanding them better, I know quite well that one of the challenges that they face, this peer pressure that we talk about, is not something that is even limited to their friends alone now. They live in a society where social media, you know, trends dominate the conversation, the interaction, and you have these trends in trying to, like, I just want to fit in, constant comparison. I also want to be like this person. This person is able to do this. They've seen it on TikTok, on Snapchat, on Instagram, and things like that. So now, how do these digital spaces impact the teens' self-esteem, their emotional well-being, especially for this one that we're talking about, Muslim teenagers now, especially when they begin to see their faith as kind of like restricting them, limiting them, rather than probably as a source of strength? You want to do this, and they will tell you, they will say, this is haram now, and mommy will not want me to do this, daddy might not want me to do that, the stars will complain and things like that. And they will actually want to feel among, because they see these things online, they see all these kinds of different challenges on TikTok, for example, and things like, and they also want to try them out. So really, so how, you know, are they able, how can they cope with this now, especially with these digital spaces, so that they don't see the religion as a limiting factor instead of a source of strength?
Okay. Yeah, the digital spaces, all the social media platforms that we have, they've come to stay. There's nothing we can do about that. So our responsibility as the Muslim community is to guide our teenagers on what to do on all these spaces. Find teenagers, maybe based on my own work and my own opinion, teenagers necessarily should not be allowed to be on those spaces, because it's like putting a child in the bush and the child is trying to look for how to navigate. But if the case is that we have some of them that are there, so what we are left with is to try to help them navigate with intention and clarity. So I would like to start from telling us the effects it has on their emotional well-being. Being in those spaces puts them in a constant state of comparison. they are comparing themselves with the people they are friends with on those spaces. So, and what they don't realize is that fake life, you know, you see things that are not actually real. Everyone on the, not everyone, majority of the people on the social media spaces are trying to perform. So it's not the real thing that you see. It's only when we are intentional as Muslims and we know why we are there that we try as much as possible to just maintain the same life online and offline. So for Muslim things, it creates a dangerous narrative such as everyone else is free. They are free to do what they like, but I'm restricted. Why can't I do what others are doing? And they now see their faith as something that is affecting them. One way to help them is to root their identity in servitude to Almighty Allah. So they know that, fine, I'm in this space, but whatever I do on this space, without comparing with others, should be a means to serve Almighty Allah, not to please my friends or to please my parents, so to say, and they should be grounded in who they are as a Muslim thing, not as what everyone wants them to be. So it affects them, and the only way they can now use their faith as anchor is to root themselves in the servitude to Almighty Allah, and to also use taqwa, awareness of Allah, consciousness of Allah, as a moral compass to make decisions in life based on what they like on the spaces, who they follow, who they watch, what they listen to. So they would use the taqwa as a moral compass or as a shield to measure what they can do there and what they cannot do. So it's not only about what my daddy wants, what Ustaz wants, it's about what Allah wants from me. So that taqwa would help them to make better decisions, to help them to navigate the spaces the way they should as a Muslim team. So that's what I would like to say for that. Hello, am I still here? Are you still with me?
All right. Hello? So now, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Thank you very much. Yes, I understand what you just said now. But at the same time, I'm also kind of like a bit, I'm trying to empathize with these kids. You know, at the point you said probably ordinarily, they should not even be on these spaces. But at the same time, you're also talking about the fact that their friends, their colleagues are there. And some of them feel like you don't want to be excluded. And they don't want probably even to be mocked by their colleagues that you don't know what is going on and things like that. Will that not probably kind of put a pressure on them one way? Then on the other hand, too, how can all, because we know that this is something that is probably, they find it all around them. So probably instead of just trying to say, don't go there, like the guidance you're not talking about. So how can they then, as Muslim teenagers, build their confidence such that they are not compromising their values, they are not totally being excluded, they are also not, feeling kind of like dejected with their Islamic identity, but then they are able to develop the courage to say no to some negative things and also learn to see their values as something that empowers them rather than actually something that makes them feel different or less than their peers.
Okay. Thank you for that question. Building their confidence. Okay, let me start by saying the parents would not be left out in this conversation because these teenagers are coming from an environment, and their first environment is their home, from their dad and their mom. So to build their confidence, their parents have a huge role to play. The home should have a system that the teenagers will build on when they are outside. So the parents will need to help them understand that their values matters. And their values matter. Their values should be hinged on the teachings from the Quran and the Sunnah. And the parents are there to help them to understand that even before they get into those spaces. That was why I said even they should not be there without understanding their family value system. Because that will be the guide that they would use. As long as the family value system or the family governance system is based on the Quran and the Sunnah, it will be easier for them to understand that that is what they should use when they interact in those spaces. Then their confidence to also come from being supported and not being shamed. This starts from home too. Do we allow our kids, our children, our teenagers to say no and disagree with us respectfully in the home? If we don't allow them to do that at home, it will be very difficult for them to say no to things that they see around them. And that still goes back to the family governance system that should be in place, that the teenagers would use as their own map to navigate. Then it comes from practicing boundaries in safe spaces. Still goes back to the home. Are they able to know what is right, what is wrong? Or is it even what is right, good or bad? Or just knowing that this is what is accepted in my deen. This is what is accepted at home, still based on my deen. So that will guide them when they get to those spaces too. So in building confidence, they should root their Islamic identity. I'll still go back to that. They should root their Islamic identity in servitude to Almighty Allah. Once they know, yes, everyone is doing this, I can't do this, not because I want to feel left out, because I'm worshiping Allah, even while I'm on this social media space. And the taqwa that I mentioned, so I'll still go back. They can build confidence through taqwa, through the awareness of Allah, through the fear of knowing that Allah is watching me and everything I do should be in line with what Almighty Allah wants from me. So confidence grows when a teen knows that they are, when they know who they are, what they stand for, and believes they are still worthy of belonging in their home, school, and the digital spaces that they found themselves in. So they need to know, for them to build confidence, they need to know who they are. And they will know who they are or understand that better when they root it in the servitude to Allah, what they stand for, what does my family governing system, what does it expect from me? What does Allah want from me? I said the governing system first should be based on the Quran and Sunnah. Then that will now guide them. So I think that is the best way for Muslim teenagers to build their confidence.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, I love the fact that you mentioned the roles parents have to play in providing these kinds of environment. That would even lead me to this next one, because I know quite well that many teenagers, they stop opening up to adults, the elderly ones, because they feel like the moment I tell them anything, what will follow will be lectures, admonitions, sometimes even judgment. You find a situation where they will pass fatwa on me now, a religious verdict, to say that this is haram, this is this. So for a lot of them, they just feel like, I know they will not listen, so why should I even open up to them in the first instance? So they just close their minds and feel like, we know they will not listen, so there is no business for me to actually tell them anything. So it's that they start keeping secret, they start hiding from their parents and things like that. So how can parents, guardians, educators, respectable scholars and leaders in the society, create safe and listening environment where teens feel comfortable sharing their doubts, including their mistakes and peer-related struggles, without fear of judgment or condemnation?
Okay, I would also like to start by still referring to the parents, because what we see in them is not just coming from the blues, as in it's something rooted in where they're coming from, the home. So I would say that first, we need to parents, caregivers, and the Muslim Ummah needs to understand that this withdrawal that we see from them or shutting up is not intentional. It's as a result of struggles, internal struggles that they have. And those internal struggles, they will not be able to communicate them because at home we've been shutting them down. When they want to say something, we don't allow them. When they want to share their struggles, we don't allow them. Some parents would allow them, but they will still shut them down. Like that thing, that struggle they are experiencing is not important, or they'll just dismiss it. Number one, parents will need to validate their teenagers' emotions. They are going through constant, like the questions that I mentioned at the beginning. They are trying to find out who they are, where they belong. So the questions will be coming. Parents should listen. Even if you go back to the seerah of the prophet, the prophet allowed the people around him to come to him to ask questions. Even the questions are not making sense, he will still allow them to say it, and he will guide them based on what Allah has revealed to him. So parents should create safe space for their children, their teenagers, by listening to them without interrupting. We are not perfect, we know that, but when we make mistakes in judging them, we too should be humble enough to repair and seek and just apologize to them. Because, as I said, we are not perfect. We might interrupt sometimes, but we should learn, we should train ourselves to listen. We should practice active listening. Then we should validate their feelings. I've mentioned that. We should be curious about what they are going through. When we see them that they withdraw, it's not that we'll start fighting with them. You should be curious and ask them, what is going on in your mind? What are you feeling? What are your struggles? What emotions are you feeling at the moment? Then we should also say it in a calm tone. Calm tone in such a way that they will be free, they will be calm to say whatever they want to say. They shut down because we've been judging them over time, and they feel, what's the essence? And when they do something, they will make mistakes. We should be prepared that teenagers will make mistakes. And mistakes that they make is part of growing. It's part of them learning to navigate the world better. So we should be there as a safe place where they can come back to us. We can go back to Allah. We should let them know they can go back to us too. And they too can go to Allah to seek forgiveness, even when they make mistakes that needs forgiveness. So we should allow them to disagree respectfully at home. Then we should let them say no to us. If they can't say no to us, they will not be able to say no to the distractions outside too. So when they are going through something, we can ask, help me understand what you are going through better. And we should let them say without interrupting them. Then when they are vulnerable enough to tell us what they are going through, if we can't undo it professionally because we're not professionals as parents, we are there to guide them. We should seek help if there is a need to seek help, so that we don't shut them down with the way we undo what they've shared with us. So the summary is that guidance will work best when there is safety, not before. They need to connect before correcting their child. So that's
so we need to connect before you can
before
correct.
Correcting. Yes.
Connection before correction. I love that. No. Yes. That goes very well. Connection before correction. All right. So because yes. I'm trying to look at some of these things that you're saying now automatically. So one way or the other, so we should listen more, especially when it's about active listening. So we should not listen to actually quickly condemn or to pass judgment, but to actually hear from them what exactly they really have to say. So, that's very, very incisive. You're still listening to Everyday Muslim on Women Radio 91.7 FM. We will go on a short break right now. When we return, the program continues. Please stay with us.
I praise Allah for sending me you, my love. You found your home and stay with me, and I'm here with you. Now let me let you know, you've opened my heart. I was always thinking that love was wrong, but everything was changed when you came along. Oh, and there's a couple of words I wanna say. For the rest of my life, I'll be with you. I'll stay by your side, honest and true, to the end of my time. I'll be loving you for the rest of my life. Through days and nights, I'll thank Allah for opening my eyes. Now and forever, I'll be there for you. I know it deep in my heart.
You're welcome back. If you just joined in, you are listening to Everyday Muslim on Women Radio 91.7 FM. And this program is brought to you by the Muslim Public Affairs Center, MPAC, in partnership with Women Radio 91.7 FM. And today we are discussing growing up Muslim, faith and peer pressure, a continuation of our mental health series for teenagers. And our guest is Dr. Tafikat Salau Ibrahim. Dr. Tafikat Salau Ibrahim is a university lecturer, a certified associate adolescent coach, and founder of Empowered Mind, and has experience in academia. She has worked closely with students and families to address the root challenges affecting adolescent growth. She blends academic expertise with coaching strategies to provide practical, faith-aligned solutions. Her work continues to inspire growth, purpose and excellence in the lives of young people and the families who raise them. You can be a part of this discourse by calling the number 07000-917-917. Our toll-free line for all the female callers is 0800-1235-917. 0800-1235-917. You can also send a message by SMS or WhatsApp to the number 081-55-917-917. That is 081-55-917-917. The program again is Everyday Muslim and is brought to you by the Muslim Public Affairs Center, MPAC, in partnership with the management of Women Radio 91.7 FM. We're also using this avenue to seek your sponsorship and advert placement to sustain the program. We look up to you for your support and assistance in this regard. This program is also streaming live on YouTube via the Women Radio page. Search Women Radio on YouTube, click on the page, and join in to view the program live on YouTube. All right. So right now, Dr. Tafika, I want us to look at probing further into the issue of mental health struggles that relates to the youth. We know quite well that these teen mental health struggles often show up in form of anger, withdrawal, sometimes silence, sometimes sudden behavioral change. Just see them, you know, behaving sometimes irrationally. And you're like, what's wrong with these people? You tell them, do this, they do the reverse. And the exact opposite, I'm like, sometimes you're like, you know, because usually when we project ourselves into them, like during our own time, these kids, you guys are enjoying. During our own time, we dare not, you know, do this to our parents. And you people are now doing this. What is wrong? Why are you people just rebellious? Why are you like this? So how can parents recognize when these reactions are signs of emotional distress rather than bad behavior, as we usually judge, you know, such attitude to be? And what probably healthy coping tools can help these teenagers manage stress and pressures constructively?
Okay. Thank you. I would like to start from that time that you just mentioned. One thing we need to understand now is that our own generation is quite different from the generation the world the teenagers are growing up in now, Gen Z's, Gen Alpha. it's a totally different generation, and what was used for us then cannot actually work for them. Find the science behind the brain has not changed, but the environment there made it easier for our parents to use the methods that they used then. Now it's not possible because the world has become a global village and they are seeing a lot that's going on. So we can't actually parent them. We can borrow from those things. I'm not trying to dismiss what our parents did, but I think the methodology might be a bit different in their own generation now. So then coming to the teenagers now, we need to understand that at the teenage age, the brain is not fully developed. Based on science, the brain is not fully developed, and teenagers tend to act based on their emotion. The part that is responsible for logical thinking is still developing, but the part that is responsible for emotions, feelings, it's well developed. So that's why you see them acting and you feel, why did you think in that direction? Why not? We as adults, the logical part of our brain is developed. We can actually think logically, but they can't because they are still working based on emotions. And the part for logical thinking is not developed. So majority of the problems that we see, that quote in quotes, problems that we call problems, behavioral problems, are not actually that they are intentional about it, that they purposely want to behave badly. It's as a result of stress, maybe stress from school, stress from even the chores that you give them at home. They need to do chores, but you know, at times, as adults too, we get overwhelmed. We need to help them to regulate their emotions because they are always thinking or making decisions from that part of their brain. And what we see as bad behavior is from emotional overload. Teenage years to know their puberty period too is still there, and hormones are fluctuating, then it might be from unprocessed fear. No, and yelling that was majorly a form of raising children in our own time. Now, you can't yell the way our parents used to do. It creates fear in them. So that fear would lead to withdrawal. Instead of you to shout at me, it's better I just keep quiet and not do what you want or act in a way that I will just please you. So there is constant fear in them. And all these things, they are crying for help. If you are not intentional and try to look inward and try to be calm, you will not know that they're actually going through something that they need help.
Hello? Hello? Seem to have a technical hitch there with the connection of Dr. Taufikat. Hello, can you hear me, Dr. Taufikat? Hello, Dr. Galfikat, are you still there? All right, so she seems to have a connection issue. The program is still Everyday Muslim on WFM 91.7 FM. And today we are taking a look at growing up Muslim, faith and peer pressure. And here, this is a part of our mental health series for children, for our teenagers. And our guest taking us through that has been Dr. Taufikat Salau Ibrahim, a university lecturer, a certified associate adolescent coach, and founder of Empowered Mind. So with who has experience and expertise handling issues that deal with families and students. So she has her experience in the academia. She has worked closely with students and families to address the root challenges affecting the adolescent group. You can actually be a part of this discourse by calling the number 07000-917-917, or you can send a message by SMS or WhatsApp to the number 08155-917-917. We hope Dr. Taufika can still reconnect with us so that we can actually coast home with this discourse. Because it's a very, very important discussion that we are having concerning our teenagers. I've just had a kind of experience with teenagers at a summer camp, holiday camp. We know there are so many camping programs around this particular period. And you have a situation where they just seem to be naturally rebellious. And you're wondering what exactly is going on. So sometimes you tend to look at it that, is this what we'll continue to battle with, or what kind of future? Sometimes you feel like, what kind of future will this set of people build? Because this rebellion, you just feel like, oh, they are being rebellious. They disobey, they do this, they do that. Now Dr. Tafika has told us that for some of them, what they are battling, they are battling with a whole lot of emotional challenges. And that comes up, that leads to some anxieties, some frustrations, and things like that. So if we actually do not take our time to understand them, what we'll continue to see is bad behavior in terms of their attitude, not knowing that that is only a symptom of the challenges that they are facing. Then by and large, she also mentioned the fact that for us as parents, as guardians, as elders in the society, as mentors or coaches, we really need to understand them better, provide an environment where they can actually express themselves, then we should not judge them by the standards of how we were raised. The situation then is not exactly the same as the situation now. So we should not judge these children by yesterday's standards. Doing that would actually be doing them a lot of harm. So this is something that we really need to take note of. All right, so we have a quick comment here from one of our regular listeners here, Madam Bola. He says, good morning, Impact WFM. I would appreciate if the guests can admonish our Islamic scholars, parents to listen more and guide these teenagers more. This period is their white time. It is their inquisitive time, double with the technology upgrade. Our alphas should have patience to explain instead of condemnation and not, and always dishing out the don'ts. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. That we should actually have patience. And she says to our parents, I know it can be overwhelming, but let us navigate this period with patience, prayers, love, and not being judgmental. Let them know it is a safe place for them to express their minds and feelings. May Allah guide us right. Thank you very much. So, Madam Bola, Jazakallah Khairan, thank you very much for the comment. And I hope parents and our Islamic scholars are also listening, that we really need to listen more to these kids. It does not mean probably we cannot correct them. But when we listen more, just like Dr. Taufika said, we should connect before we can correct. If you don't connect, you can't correct, and they will never accept anything you're trying to say to them, because they feel like you don't want to understand them. You don't seem to understand what they are going through. So I hope Dr. Taufika is back, and I hope we can connect with her again. All right, yeah.
Hi, I'm sorry. The network went off.
The network threw you out initially.
Yes.
It's one of the dysfunctions of this virtual network. But then, so you are back. So we had a comment, and I just want you to probably listen while I quickly retake it for you to make a comment. And the comment from one of our regular listeners. Yes, the comment is that he says, good morning, Impact WFM. I would like to appreciate if the guests can admonish our Islamic scholars and parents to listen more and guide these teenagers more. This period is their why time, where they ask questions. When you ask them to do something, you always ask why. She says it is their inquisitive time, double with the technology upgrade. Our fathers will have the patience to explain instead of condemnation and always dishing out don'ts. So our parents, I know it can be overwhelming, but let us navigate this period with patience, prayers, love, and not being judgmental. Let them know it is a safe place for them to express their minds and feelings. May Allah guide us aright. So I want you to quickly respond to that.
Okay, it's a comment. I didn't get, is there a question there? I think the person is just trying
No, it's a comment. It's a comment. She said she just wants you can admonish our Islamic scholars and parents as well.
Okay.
To these kids.
Okay. I think from what I've shared so far, I reiterated what the role of the parents should be. Then the Islamic scholars too. What I would say is that the Islamic scholars are trying. They are trying. The only thing I would like to say is that ustazas around should try to talk more about the mercy of Allah, the rahmah of Allah, more than they talk about Allah will punish you, you will go to hell. Those things are there, we know. But we should show them the rahmah side, if I can use that word, of Allah, rather than
The mercy side.
Yes, the mercy side of
the
Allah.
The benevolence.
Of Allah, rather than just talking about when you do this, you go to hell. When you do this, you go. So we should start from talking about that Allah is merciful. When you are wrong, when you make mistakes, you can always turn back to Allah. At Tawbah, you can always come back and seek forgiveness from Allah and still try to grow in a way that is okay. So Islam is a growth-based system which is inch on mercy. Not only you go to hellfire, we should try. That's the only thing I would want to say regarding the scholars. They are doing a great job and they are doing well.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Now, because you talked about the Islamic scholars now, the issue of our religious leaders, the Asatis, these religious scholars who are versed in the religion. Now, I am forced to ask that we know quite well that faith can be a powerful tool, a powerful anchor where it is taught with compassion and understanding. So how can Islamic teachings, role models and spiritual practices help teenagers build resilience, self-worth, and emotional clarity, especially when they feel judged, lonely, or overwhelmed by the pressures around them?
Sorry, please, I was a little bit distracted. Please, can you come again with that question, please?
All right, so I was saying that, for our religious scholars, we know quite well that faith plays an important role. And we said that faith, so how can the Islamic teachings, the Islamic role models and spiritual practices help teenagers build that resilience, that self-worth, and the emotional clarity, especially when they feel judged, lonely, or overwhelmed by the pressures around them? So how can the religious teachings, be a source of solace, a source of succor for them, rather than, especially when they find themselves being judged or being overwhelmed, or sometimes even when they feel withdrawn, into their shell because of the pressures around them?
Okay, thank you for that wonderful question. Islam is a complete way of life. And we should let our teenagers understand that Islam is not, the teachings of Islam or worshipping Allah would not make them caged. Rather, it will give them freedom to do whatever they want to do without fear of anyone. Because what you are doing is to serve Allah, it's not to please human. So I would like to say that Islamic teachings helps to give teenagers an identity rooted in the servitude to Allah. The teachings of Islam would give teenagers or will help them to have an identity rooted in servitude to Almighty Allah. That's number one, the way Islamic teachings can help. Number two is that it helps them to have an heart-centered understanding of emotions. I would like to explain this particular point with the hadith of the prophet where he said, there is a piece of flesh in the body. If it is sound, the entire body is sound. And if it is corrupt, the entire body is corrupt. And he touched the heart. So they should understand that whatever they are going through is a bit, it's heart-centered. They need to work on that emotion or learn how to regulate their emotions more. And I will still go back to the parents. We need to support them in doing this. If you don't know how to, you can seek help from people that can help our adolescents or teenagers build this self-regulation, this emotional regulation to navigate their period. Then the third point would be that Islamic teachings would make it possible for them to use taqwa, the awareness of Allah, as a moral compass. So they would know what Islam wants from them, what their parents want from them, which should still be based on what the Quran and the Sunnah has explained to us to make decisions. It will help them in picking friends. That consciousness of Allah will help them in picking friends, to help them in making decisions when their friends are inviting them to things that they know Islam does not want. They would be able to navigate. Even if they know, as I said, we are not perfect. Even if they make mistakes, they can always turn back and seek forgiveness. And the third one, the third point on how Islam can help us or can help teenagers to navigate this period is that it helps them to have a sense of belonging in the Muslim community. And the way we can do this as people around them, parents, boosters, schools, is to have an environment where they can be free to do what they want to do, where they can engage in sports, engage in, say, in games that are halal. Because this is their age, they actually want freedom. They want a sense of independence. They want to feel like they can do whatever they want. So we are the ones to create the environment where they can do whatever they want, but in a way that would be that they are serving Almighty Allah. So we need to have mentorship spaces for them. We need to have maybe parks where they can go to relax. No, Islam doesn't say we can't have fun, but we should have fun in a way that is good. And that's period they want to have fun. And the last one is that it helps them to understand that Islam is a mercy-based religion. No one is perfect. We will make mistakes. As we are trying to guide them, they might still make few mistakes, which will make it possible for them to come back to us and to also come back to Almighty Allah.
Allah. All right, very quickly. Now, as we conclude this mental health series, what message of hope and reassurance would you share with these teenagers and the parents raising them?
And the parents.
Yes. Yeah. And what is that one small practical step they can take today to begin the healing process to strengthen their connection and build confidence moving forward?
Okay. For the teenagers that might be listening or their parents, and they should understand that what they are going through, it's not strange. That stage of trying to fit in, because they are still acting based on their emotions. They are not broken, and the struggles that they go through does not make their faith weak. They are still learning, they are growing. And that the burning questions that they have in their mind does not cancel the belief that they have in Almighty Allah.
Allah, all right. It's very quickly.
Where they have,
because of time, so that one practical step they can take today now. Now we have had some of those pieces of advice.
For the teenagers, they should ensure they are in good companies. for the parents, they should curate an environment where their teenagers can be free to talk. They should connect with them before they correct them. And they should always repair. Because they're not perfect, they should try to repair with their children when they make mistakes. That's the way they'll be able to do well when they go outside too.
All right, Jazakumullah khair. I would like to thank Dr. Tawfika Aslam Ibrahim for the insight that she has shared on the program today, especially as it relates to our teenagers. And I hope parents, guardians, even our religious leaders have listened to it in the way we relate with these our teenagers. See, these are the future. In fact, it's not even about the future. They are the owners of today.
Yeah.
And the environment that they live in, the pressures that they undergo,